Lots of people working full-time retail and fast food still have incomes low enough to get public assistance. I'm David Brancaccio. Walmart and McDonald's have the most workers on their payroll who are also on Medicaid and federal food assistance, according to a new government report. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with more.
All right. This report comes from Congress's nonpartisan General Accountability Office. It was commissioned by Senator Bernie Sanders to look at two things. What we know about whether people on food assistance and Medicaid are actually working and where they're working. And the answers from the GAO, 70% are full-time workers. That's nearly 6 million people on Medicaid, almost 5 million on food assistance, known as SNAP. Also, a vast majority work in the private sector. And as you mentioned, David, McDonald's and Walmart top the list.
And what kind of percentages are we talking about when you look at the whole list?
Well, overall, the numbers do not exceed 4% for any one employer. And the GAO said it could only rely on employer data from a few states because those states recorded and verified where people who received benefits actually worked. Now, in those few states, Walmart had the most workers, 15,000 on food assistance and more than 10,000 on Medicaid. McDonald's had the next highest totals, but those totals were substantially less than Walmart, about half as many people on Medicaid, for example. Another huge company on the list was Amazon. It had more than 8,000 workers on both assistance programs. Now, we reached out to all three companies for comment, but haven't heard back yet.
All right, Nova, thank you. There is somber news that more people signed up for unemployment benefits last week compared to the week before, 743,000. Analysts say this weekly figure may be hard to parse in the coming month since statisticians seasonally adjust that figure, but try doing that with a holiday hiring season that's so strange this year given pandemic. But for those who can work, many have been interested in getting real estate. Guy Labat is chief fixed income strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott.
Over the course of the last year, home construction, home sales are up significantly. Yesterday, we had information on what are called housing starts, which are essentially how many new homes are being constructed, and they're up 14% year over year. And one of the great things about the housing market is it has tremendous multiplier effect across other areas of the economy. Each dollar spent in what we call residential investment, which is sort of building a new house or renovating, generates as much as $3 to $5 of other activity elsewhere in the economy. So that's one really positive sign that I think we need to spend some time looking at and feeling good about.
And in stark contrast to the last huge financial crisis, right, when you had this mortgage crisis and you didn't have at least that underpinning the mess.
Yeah, that's a really great point, a really great comparison. And part of the reason, I suspect, is because monetary officials, the Federal Reserve, were very aggressive in cutting interest rates this time around and frankly, supporting many areas of the housing markets that have come to boom over the last 6 months, 9 months, even while other areas of the economy have deteriorated.
Guy Labat at Janney Montgomery Scott, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
A new survey by the American Hotel and Lodging Association finds that 7 in 10 hotel and motel owners think they won't make it another 6 months without further federal assistance. And with people being urged to cool it for the holidays given pandemic, what is normally a busy time for that industry may not be, Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
Back in February, Brent Underwood was getting ready for South by Southwest in Austin. He owns a 20-bed hostel there and was booked solid. Then COVID-19 hit, and he suspended operations. These days?
effectively, we are out of business. The business has been shut down. The property is for sale.
It's not just mom-and-pop hotels feeling the crunch. The Marriotts and Hiltons of the world operate some hotels, but they also franchise out a lot of them to independent owners. Alex Suskind at Cornell says, as in most sectors,
you know, the larger companies are probably in a little bit better shape.
He says there's likely to be some consolidation of property as a result of the pandemic. Still, Michael Knoll at Texas Tech University says eventually boutique hotels will rebound.
There will be a time where that hotel will reopen because the demand is going to come back, but not every business owner is going to survive and be able to raise the capital to start it up again.
But he says nothing will get back to normal in the hotel industry until COVID-19 is under control. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Spending by candidates could break records in the races for two Georgia Senate seats that were close enough on November the 3rd to trigger fresh runoff elections. Incumbent Republican Senator David Perdue versus Democrat John Ossoff and Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler has a rematch with Reverend Raphael Warnock, a Democrat. One voting block that can't be reached so easily with pricey TV ads, 18-year-olds, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
Mike Augusto is so immersed in the runoff election, he spent part of his 18th birthday last week talking about it with a reporter, me.
I actually turned 18 today.
Oh,
today's my birthday, yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, ma'am.
Just a couple weeks ago, Augusto was too young to vote in the presidential election, but that didn't stop him from co-founding Students for Tomorrow at his high school in the Atlanta suburbs. Their pitch? Vote if you want to change things.
Students' positions on a lot of topics like climate change, gun control, and equality in general has been largely ignored in government.
To get out the vote, they're relying on the most potent weapon in a teenager's arsenal, peer pressure. Gusto says he spends 7 to 8 hours a day sending out emails and talking on the phone. He can't do much texting because his mom says that would be too expensive. Students for Tomorrow doesn't have a budget. Neither does Julia Geske.
There is just like people power.
Geske is a get-out-the-vote campus organizer at Georgia State University with the Georgia Public Interest Research Group.
We sent like over 8,000 text messages. We called almost 3,000 people.
Looks like that worked. 20% of Georgia voters in the presidential election were 18 to 29 years old, 3 percentage points higher than the national average. And there are around 23,000 Georgia teens who were too young to cast a ballot November 3rd, but will turn 18 in time to vote January 5th. They're getting special attention from Geske.
Educating them about everything and giving them the resources they need to register and then also to vote.
Meanwhile, the Democratic and Republican national committees are spending big money to target the youth vote. Georgia State University political science professor Amy Steigerwalt says they, too, are relying more on the phone.
More phone banking than I think we've seen in previous years because so many people are at home.
And if they don't answer, Steigerwalt says, volunteers will knock on their doors, wearing PPE, of course. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.